Hey, how many Grammys do you have? Albany Symphony has two. I just thought I'd start that off. They are going to be showcasing two of Mozart's greatest works, Haydn Symphony No. 80 and a world premiere on Saturday, January 13th. That's this weekend at 7:30 p.m. And Sunday, January 14th at 3 o'clock at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. Albany Symphonies, and is it Steinke?
Steinke.
Steinke and Mozart and More from 1784 will be presented to delight music lovers with beautiful classics and a world premiere. And we are thrilled to have the maestro of the Albany Symphony Orchestra, David Alan Miller, with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you? I'm great. I wanted to wish you a happy New Year.
Yeah, happy New Year to you. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program and to find out what's going on with the orchestra, and which I am, you know, thrilled to see that. I'm struck sometimes that we have a lot of organizations that come in, and they come in and they'll tell us about their concert or their event, and then because things are the way they are, it may be the one they do that year, or two that they do that year, or the 3-5 days that they do.
We just keep cranking them out,
and you keep cranking them out, and I think that's a testament to your organization, to your leadership as a music director, and obviously bringing this incredible orchestra to our attention time and time again.
Well, that's very kind of you, Joe. But actually, you know, if you think of orchestras in the major cities, they're kind of we do it kind of every month. We do a big concert every month. Yeah. They're doing it every weekend, sometimes 2 or 3 or 4 times a weekend. And so it is actually a great challenge when you're doing it that frequently to make each one fresh and each one unique. And one of the things I really love about our sized orchestra for our sized community, what we call a regional orchestra, is that, you know, we do have enough time between our shows, and each show is its own very unique special happening that they really can be kind of unique experiences, and that's really what we try to design.
This may be impossible to answer, and you don't have to be overly specific, but at what point did this particular, the performance that will take place on the 13th and 14th, at what point was that sort of in concrete of this is what we're going
to
do?
Well, we always plan at least a year, and usually, ideally, a year and a half to 2 years in advance. So we, for example, we're just working on the final touches because we're going to be announcing our next season within essentially weeks, at least to our subscribers, to our existing audience. So we're always working very far ahead, and we always could be working even further ahead. We're always working to work even further ahead. So we've known we're doing this concert, and it's great because, you know, all the soloists have had chances to work on it. The composer has had a year to create her piece, commissioned piece on the program. Haydn and Mozart have been assiduously at work, you know, working on their pieces. And so I think they've got them in pretty good shape.
So give us a sense of your process then of putting, as you just said, with the old with the new, of how you work on it, and over these days before the performances of how you, for want of a better term, attack it.
Sure. And actually, what's usually wonderful about this is I have kind of an idea of why these pieces go together in an interesting way. I put them together, and then when I really get down to working on the pieces and really studying them in depth, I find so many more connections, interrelated things that bind them together, that speak to each other, particularly in these two pieces. I mean, I knew it was a bit of a... Yes, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, so you sort of prove your intuition correct.
Yeah, I mean, not always, of course. I don't want to be too
just
self-aggrandizing.
Just say yes, yeah.
But I'm often delighted. I don't know that I'm surprised. I'm delighted to find how much interact, particularly in a concert like this, because this concert, the premise, my premise, we'd kind of done a year in the life of various composers. We did a deep exploration of Mozart in 1786, which was a particularly fertile year for him. And I thought, well, let's pick another year, but because I love Haydn so much, and Haydn and Mozart were so close to one another. Haydn was really like Mozart's spiritual father, because his actual father was a bit of a handful. And they were very, very close, right up to Mozart's death in 1791, when Haydn was, you know, Haydn was 23 years Mozart's senior, but he lived long after him. Mozart lived well into the 19th century, into 1809. Mozart died in 1791, but they were very, very close. And I thought, well, why not look at a year for both of them? So the year I picked kind of a little bit randomly, but not that randomly, was 1784. And this beautiful Haydn symphony, which I had not known, number 80, you know, Haydn wrote 104 plus symphonies, probably more like 107 or 108. And each one is just its own world of magic. This one happened to be in D minor, you know, and I love dark, brooding pieces. And I thought, well, Haydn is not usually a dark, brooding guy. So I listened to it a year and a half ago, and I thought, this piece is amazing. So I programmed that. And then Mozart wrote actually six piano concertos in 1784. And this is the last one he wrote in December 1784. It's one of my absolute favorite of his, I guess, 27 piano concertos. It's number 19, Kerschel 459 in F major. And what's amazing about it is I might argue that it's, I think, one of his first fully mature concertos, piano concertos. He'd written these five other concertos in the year. And at this point, you know, Mozart had moved to Vienna in 1781 and had established himself as this great performer composer, and had really had to, kind of build his own career. He was desperately trying to find a prince or a king to adopt him and make him the music director of their palace. He was wholly unsuccessful in that through his whole career. So Mozart created this whole career as a freelance performer composer, and he discovered that if he put on these concerts in kind of alternative venues and played his own piano concertos, his own incredibly fanciful piano concertos, that he could actually make a living. And so 1784 was the year of these six piano concertos. And actually, it was the year in which, it was one of the 2 years in which he had the most income. And he had most of this income just from selling subscriptions, kind of like what we do,
right,
mainly to nobility, to come to his concerts to hear him, you know, premiere his next amazing piano concerto. So my takeaway from going deeply into these two composers in 1784 is that these guys were unbelievable innovators. I mean, Mozart was an artistic administration innovator. He was one of the first great impresarios. You know, usually before that, music was for the church or music was for a princely family. Mozart was really kind of a breakthrough figure in writing music for a much broader public. And Haydn was kind of the opposite. He worked for this princely family, the Esterházy family, almost his whole life until Prince Nicholas Esterházy died in 1790. And then Haydn was free to go off to England and become a big superstar. But Haydn, because of the support of this family, was able to do unbelievable, innovative things. So these two pieces are just wildly innovative, all the different things that go on in them. Just incredible. I can't believe that this amount of innovation was allowed in 1784. It's just crazy. I mean, these guys are inventing these forms. Forms, essentially.
And so then how does the world premiere fit in the sense of what you have in mind for that piece to fit the placement?
Well, that's the thing about world premieres. World premieres are always a risk because you tell the composer what you have in mind, and then she or he goes off and creates their work. And then it's either what you had in mind or more likely nothing at all like what you had in mind. So all I asked Harriet, Harriet's a lovely young composer who just finished her graduate, her master's at Yale, and we had a piece, an existing piece that we played last year that I liked very much. And so I said, why don't you write a piece for next year? And I said, it's going to be on a concert that's all Haydn and Mozart. So not that, you know, the last thing a young composer today should do is try to imitate the style or the world of Mozart and Haydn, but just know that it's about that and it's about this year, 1784, and write a piece that you think will complement that. And so Harriet, I think very wisely, wrote a very elegant, frankly, very simple, very beautiful little piece, 9 minutes, called The Slow Movement. And her point, I think, is that she always, when she listened to pieces by Mozart and Haydn and other great classical composers, the movement she loved was always the slow movement, the middle movement, because instead of those fast outer movements, you could really hear what was going on because it unfolded slowly. And so she wrote her own very delicate and beautiful slow movement, just a standalone piece to go in the middle of this wonderfully inventive Haydn-Mozart concert.
I have a crass question.
Please.
And I've been interviewing
the
you.
The crasser for, the better, Joe.
I've been interviewing you for decades, uh-huh, and I don't think this
You've
question,
ever asked me a crass.
Well, this question just came to my mind, and I thought, because you said 9 minutes, Do they get the same amount of money if it's 9 minutes as compared to 22 minutes?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, usually, like in the good old days when composers really would tell you what you had to pay them.
Yes.
Before they needed the work more than you did, they would compose by the minute.
Okay.
So it'd be like $1,000 a minute. So
gotcha.
A 22-minute piece would be $22,000. A 9-minute piece would be $9,000. It's gotten away from that a lot, and particularly with younger composers like Harriet, who are just starting out on their career, I frankly always feel like, while we want to pay them a respectful sum, it's much more important that they get the experience. So it's true that I always tell the composer the duration generally I want, and if they go a few minutes over or it's a few minutes shorter, that's fine. But it's usually a fixed fee for that amount of time. But if it were a big, long piece, I would pay the composer more that we wanted. But if it's a short piece, I'd pay the composer a bit less.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, that's fascinating.
It's kind of logical, I think.
Yeah. And now I...
Not that crass.
No.
I thought you were going to hit me with a really crass one.
No. I don't think we ever talked about...
Yeah, well, it's all commerce. And that's what's so interesting, because, you know, I read a letter yesterday about someone was criticizing Haydn for always being focused on money. Why is he so focused on... Well, the truth was, even though he had a job with a princely family, he got a living stipend, but then in terms of his retirement and when the older prince died and the younger prince didn't want to keep everybody on staff, he gave Haydn a nice but modest annual allowance. But Haydn needed money. Everybody needed money. Bach needed money. Mozart needed money. If you read their letters, about 70% of it is about money. I need to get this much money for this piece and that much money for that piece. And so commerce is a big part, particularly for creative artists. They need to be paid. You know.
Yeah.
Even Haydn and Mozart needed to be
changed.
Paid. Never changed.
The art,
and especially
still...
for someone like Mozart, who didn't have a king or a prince really underwriting him. At the end of his short life, the emperor in Austria, in Vienna, did finally give him a sort of modest position. So he had 400 florins a year or whatever it was. It wasn't livable, but it at least was a buttress against poverty. It was hard.
You have so much knowledge, as you've shared with us this morning, about this, a narrative that you have around this. And you share that with the audience too, don't you?
I try to, yeah. And we always do a pre-concert talk before every concert. You know, an hour before, we do a half-hour talk. And it's kind of like this in a little more detail. But I love, and I always feel like what excites me so much about the great works is getting deep, deep inside them. And I'm sure I assume that's the same case with the audience as well.
Well, I find it interesting because there are conductors who will just come on, do
play
the
it.
Piece, and leave.
Play it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I always find it educational and interesting, instead of just in the program notes, to have someone say, oh, you may want to listen for this is how this responds, this is how this relates to what we just heard, this is what this is going to do, and later on we're going to hear this, and that will all kind of bring it together.
It's a fine line, but you know, it's an entertainment. People are paying to be entertained. You want to entertain them. You don't want to give them a class. But at the same time, I always believe that a little awareness of what's unique about this piece or that piece, and particularly about new pieces. We always have the composer say a few words from the stage about his or her piece, because we want to be sure that whoever can get it gets it, and we want to be sure that people know that, you know, an actual human created this thing, and she or he thought about it and why they picked these notes and this shape and this form, et cetera, et cetera. And I just I find, particularly with these pieces like the Mozart Piano Concerto, this piece comes at a time when Mozart had just rediscovered the works of Johann Sebastian Bach. In his time, Bach was almost forgotten. The Bach sons were more famous than their dad. And Mozart had a friend, Baron von Sweden, who had one of the great private libraries, and he invited Mozart in for 2 years. Mozart sat there every week for a day, an afternoon, and studied these works, along with works of Handel and other earlier composers he also knew. But I'm convinced that what makes this F major piano concerto so great is that the last movement has such unbelievable, what we call counterpoint, you know, like fugue, where you have the same melodic material running against itself at intervals, very complicated processes, but it's so brilliant. And it's obviously so inspired by his deep study of earlier music. So I love things like that kind of show you why this specific piece is unique.
We have less than 2 minutes, but I don't want to have you go away without talking about the pianist, and also the Juilliard singers.
Yeah, well, we have, and I used to do this early in my tenure here, we have a forte pianist coming to play the piece with us. Yiheng Yang is the forte piano professor at Juilliard, and also a piano professor there as well. She's a brilliant pianist, but specializes in essentially Mozart's piano, the precursor of the modern-day piano, which is a much smaller, lighter, fresher-sounding little instrument that plays a little more out of tune because it's tuned a little differently. And she's bringing her forte piano, and we'll be playing it with the actual kind of piano Mozart would have played it. And then we're also opening the program with just three beautiful little arias from the Marriage of Figaro with two brilliant young Juilliard students, a baritone, Jared Werlein, and a soprano, Gemma Na. And that's just sort of to show the breadth, along with a piano concerto, a symphony, to show this incredible operatic creativity of Mozart in the mid-1780s.
Saturday, January 13th at 7:30, Sunday, January 14th at 3 at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. The pre-concert talks are
an hour ahead
of time, and it'll be a beautiful weekend of music, as always. You can find out more by going to AlbanySymphony.com. AlbanySymphony.com. David Allen Miller, it's always a delight to speak to you.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Joe. And come hear the orchestra, which sounds beautiful, and come hear the hall, which also sounds unbelievable.
Perfect. Well, hopefully you'll be, when you have the subscription, you'll come back and tell us about that.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC, and coming up next, it's the news from the BBC.